Good morning, everyone. If you're new to Fairhaven, my name's Greg, and I'm one of the pastors here. And you may be wondering, like, why is this guy walking out with this big, huge ladder? And it's because I couldn't find a bigger one. This is the biggest one I could find. And this Sunday is actually Next Step Sunday. And I wanted us to think about next steps in a way that we might actually have this thing stick with us. And so Pastor Lori mentioned that we have seven next steps that we've been looking at. And the way that we came about those seven next steps was that we had a group of pastors from our churches that got together, and group of pastor and leaders that began to look through the Bible and to really study the Bible and think through, what does it look like for us to be a people that is growing closer and closer to Jesus, having a greater impact in this world? What does it look like for us to not just think about Christianity as a destination, but a journey, something that we're on? What does it look like for us to get a culture, and that is the collective behaviors of all the individuals that are in an organization, that it would become normative for us to be on a journey, every single one of us moving somewhere, taking a journey where we're becoming more and more and more like Jesus. And so over the last several weeks, we have been preaching on those seven steps. And today we're going to do that as well. And there was the first week we talked about the word gather, that we want to gather together and we don't want to neglect being the kind of people that would get together, whether it's online or in groups or in worship, because something happens when we come together. The second step we talked about is that of growth, that we want to be a people that grow. And Lori spoke about that already this morning as well, that we want to be the kind of people that are being intentional about reading the Bible and spiritual practices, because something happens in us when we do that. The next step that we talked about is the word connect. And I want us to think about it in this way. Again, these are steps. They're not sequential. They're not ones that you start here and you go there. It's not a linear thing. It's a journey that we're on. But when we connect, we want to connect well with one another. We want to be connected to each other in this way, knowing that we go together in a way that we can't go alone. And if you want to go somewhere fast, go alone. If you want to go somewhere far, then you're going to have to go with people. And this is a cool saying, but if you want to go somewhere fast and far, you need your people. You need to go with your tribe. You need that core people, your family, your friends, those people that you can really trust that actually help us propel forward faster together. The next step we were talking about is that of serve, that we want to be the kind of people that are serving together, that we're actually given of our lives. Jesus came, and he spoke about that he didn't come to be served, he came to serve and to give his life. And he said, as the Father sent me, now I'm sending you. And so we are called to serve. That next step is that of witness. And when we witness, it's this, that I have a story to tell, you have a story to tell. There is the greater story of Jesus that we want to tell in this world. And so as we witness to our story and Christ's story as it intersects with our story to be good news people in this world. The next step would be that of give. And as a people, we always want to be in a place that we are giving generously. We talk about that often around here, that giving is important. And the best life to live is a generous life. And then the final step, and I'm really glad this is the final step and that our team didn't do any more than seven or I'd keep climbing. It actually says here this is not a step. Could be a seat, but I'm not going to sit up there either. But the final step is that of impact, that we want to live a life that actually leaves an impact in this world, leaves an impact in those people that we love, leaves an impact in those people that we meet for the first time and then are able to invest in, leaves an impact in our family, our community, and in our world. That's the kind of people that we actually want to be. And I think about climbing a ladder, and I thought about this a bunch of times, and I thought, I'm not going to do it. My wife's not in worship. She would have got really nervous at one point, and maybe you did too. But I thought, why would I do this? I'm going to tell you why. It's because we actually believe in this. And I'm not just speaking for me, and I'm not just speaking for the staff of Fairhaven Church. I'm speaking for our Harbor churches. We believe in what we've been talking about. We actually believe, this is the fifth of our 30 Next Step Sundays. We believe that the lives of people like we just witnessed, they're going to be different for taking a step, stepping out boldly in faith, taking a small or a big step in all of these seven, that when we engage in those things, our lives are going to be different, and the lives of those around us are actually going to be different. And so I thought, there's a statement of William Booth. He's the founder of the Salvation Army. He said one time that, and I'll move this a bit for you guys over there. Not a ton, but William Booth actually spoke that if he could win one more person to Christ, his words were, if I could help one more soul come to the Lord. We say it this way around here. If we could help one more person find their way back to God, what he said was, I would learn to stand on my head and walk with my hands or play the tambourine with my feet if I thought that would help one more person come. And so I thought about this, and I almost didn't do it, but I thought if this helps us to think about our individual lives here this morning, of taking these steps right here, these seven steps, or taking a journey to take one of those, it matters. And I want us to think about that this morning, so much so that we have planned a different sort of service, that at one point in the service, we're going to have space for you to just sit with Christ, to sit with the Holy Spirit, and to think about, where am I being invited in? Where is God asking me to step next? And in particular this morning, I want us to think about like the end game here. Like, what do we long for with our lives? What are we hoping happens with this life of ours? And when I think about that, I think about that impact. Leaving an impact in our family, leaving an impact in our community, leaving an impact in our world, making a difference in our world. And to dream with me just for a minute, to think about, how might this world be different? How might this community be different? How might your family be different? If you were to just step into that one thing, or maybe a handful of things that God has wired you up for, that God has designed you for, that you're really good at, something that somehow you can do this in a way that others just don't do it as well, and it's not because you're better than them. You just happen to look at something and go, I don't know why everybody's not amazing at this, because it just comes so easy to me, but apparently it doesn't come that easily to others. Or that thing that you're just so passionate about, and you look around and you go, well, other people aren't as passionate about this as I am, but I love this thing, or the thing that you're wired up for. I would ask the question, what is that? What is it when you think about, I'm really good at this, and why? And I'm really passionate about this, and why? And I'm wired up for this. Why? And where was the origin of all of that? I wonder if you, like me, have ever wondered, like some point in your life, about this sort of stuff, and just thought to yourself, is it only extraordinary people that do extraordinary things, or is it just ordinary people that do extraordinary things as well? Because we probably have all heard that statement before, that God does extraordinary things through ordinary people. Well, here's my belief, is that ordinary people are the only people that ever do extraordinary things. The only ones. Because I actually don't think there is such a thing as extraordinary people. I think people do extraordinary things, but I think everybody actually is ordinary. And when I say that, I don't diminish us, because I think everybody is created in an amazing way with the image of God in us, with incredible potential to actually live into who you are and how God has designed you. And when I think about some people that have done some amazing things, man, I can leap to stories of like, this guy's incredible, to watch a sports figure and think, how in the world do they do that? Somebody like a LeBron James, and you go, how does this guy do this? I mean, he can go down the court and dribble like he's a guard. He can play in the post like he's some kind of center. He can go out to the corners and play like he's a power forward. He can hit 3-point. Like, can this guy, what can't he do? And I'm like, I like basketball. I tried out for the junior high team. This is a true story, by the way. I tried out for the junior high team. I wanted to be on it. I didn't make it. Like, they had 15 on the team, and I didn't make the first 15, but I made the B team because the Jenison Wildcats, they had an A team and a B team. That's what they called it. What do you think were the better players, right? This is not hard to figure out, and I was on the B team. Then on the B team, we had more players than the A team. We had more on our team, and so the first five got a start. I wasn't in that group. I came off the bench on the B team, all right? And I thought, I like basketball, but why? Was LeBron James, why is he so amazing? Was it just work? Is it just work ethic? Michael Jordan. If you watched any of the documentary around Michael Jordan, that guy worked harder than almost every other basketball player. Is that alone the thing that made him amazing? Or was he so designed by master designer that he had this capacity to actually exercise that gift and to step into that passion? Do these players, pick your favorite one and then whatever sport, and do they have this ability just on their own, or were they wired up that way? What if we, who are wired, ordinary people who are wired up by God, who are given this passion, somewhere it comes from deep down inside of us, a passion I think about even for me, like when I was a little kid, is this my passion or was it God's passion that he birthed into me? Like, we used to take our bikes apart as little kids, and we didn't do it when mom or dad were around, but when we got a chance, we'd get some wrenches and pull our bikes completely apart, take the wheels off, and then put them all back on again. And I'm still doing it. 57 years old, I just do it with motorcycles now. I like to pull them apart, put them back together again. Where is that passion coming from? I think it was birthed in me. I think God birthed those things. And then this gift, some of us are gifted in something, some in others. Where does that come from? I believe it comes from God. It's a bunch of ordinary people that begin to identify, these are the things I've been wired up to do, and then give ourselves to those things. What would the world be like? What would our community be like if every single one of us leaned into learning more about that, leaned into whatever we felt passionate about, leaned into a greater capacity to make a greater impact in the world around us? There are two guys that we've been talking about that actually stepped in really to and wanted to make a difference in the world. We've been talking about them over the last several weeks. And the two guys that we've been talking about are, we could say, probably the most renowned prophets of the Old Testament. They're the ones that come up again and again and again. It's Elijah and Elisha. And we can look at these guys and go, man, the stuff that they did, 8 miracles that Elijah performed, 16 that came by God through this man, Elisha. This is incredible stuff. Were they extraordinary people? Not according to Jesus' brother. James actually wrote in his epistle, he wrote about Elijah, saying these words right here. He said Elijah was just a human being, just like us. Elijah was ordinary. Elijah was wired up by God. He had different wiring or different passions or different giftings, maybe than many of the people around him, but it was God who designed this. Elijah was a human being, ordinary, just like us. He prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3.5 years. Again, he prayed and the heavens gave rain and the earth produced its crop. Here's an ordinary guy that had great faith, and the God who designed him to do the work that God could do through the design that he was. Say, this is all I have. It's who I am. But you have the capacity to take everything that you have made me to be and to use it for great impact in this world. And I long for that. Elijah was an ordinary man who placed great faith in a great God. Now, the story of Elisha. We're going to be reading 2 Kings and just a portion of his story, 2 Kings chapter 13, verses 14 through 19. And once in a while, when you go to the Bible, you probably have experienced this before, when we read it, you read it and go, weird. Like, this is really weird. I don't get it. And I'm looking at this. This is just really a strange story. We are about to read one of those. Now, Elisha had been suffering from the illness from which he died. Not weird, but it's about to get weird. Joash, king of Israel, went down to see him and wept over him. Again, not weird, but it's about to get weird right now. My father, my father. It's not actually his father, so what's that? He cried, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. Like, what? And then he continues. Elisha said, get a bow and some arrows. Why? And he did so. Why? Take the bow in your hands. Again, why? He said to the king of Israel. When he had taken it, Elisha put his hands on the king's hands. Why? Open the window, open the east window, he said, and he opened it. Shoot, Elisha said, and he shot. The Lord's arrow of victory, the arrow of victory over Aram, Elisha declared, you will completely destroy the Arameans at Aphek. Then he said, take the arrows, and the king took them. Elisha told him, strike the ground. What? He struck the ground three times and stopped. The man of God was angry with him and said, you should have struck the ground five or six times. Then you would have completely defeated Aram and completely destroyed it. But now you will defeat it only three times. Right? Was I wrong? Just kind of weird, right? This story. I mean, you ever read the Bible and just go to yourself like, I don't know what that says. I'm going to need help with it, or I'll just go on to the next story. This is one of those times, because what we have is the king, Jehoash, approaches a dying prophet who's on his deathbed. And he comes to him and says, my father, my father. It's not his father. And then he says this weird line, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel. Like, those are great words of comfort, right? Like, what is that line? And then after that, what does the prophet say? But got a bow and arrow. I have one. Shoot an arrow out the east window. Grab some arrows out of your quiver. And he grabs them. Strike the ground. He strikes the ground once, two, three times. And with that, the prophet is upset with him and says to him, you should have struck the ground five or six times, then you would have defeated Aram and completely destroyed it, but now you would defeat it only three times. Now, here's what's fascinating in this story, and to me, this is really fascinating. This isn't the first time we see that weird statement that is being made by the king when he approaches Elisha, when he comes in and says, my father, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel. It's not the first time we see it in the Bible. We see it when Elisha is actually with Elijah. And Elijah was, if you will, he was his mentor. It was he who discipled Elisha and took him and sent him on the course that he would be on. And Elisha was with him near the end of his time on planet Earth. And I'm careful to say not the end of his life, because what we see is that Elijah is actually taken up from this world without having died. And he's taken up in this whirlwind in a chariot of fire. And what Elisha says to him, another like crazy story. But what he says to him, he says, my father, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel. Like, what? I mean, there's no way that both of these guys just pulled that statement out of thin air. It's like all of a sudden they didn't know what to say, and these are the words that came to them. It's the exact same statement. So what is it that's going on here? And what's happening here is that this was language that was used in the mythology, actually, of the day. It was used by many during the day that they thought that somehow that the gods, lesser G's, smaller G's, would usher in on chariots, that they would usher in deities into the war. It was the language that was used in wartime. It was thought that these charioteers had the capacity to bring a god of battle into the battle and actually secure the battle for the people. When the king was walking into the room, he knew that Elisha, as was Elijah, was often very present in the wars of Israel. That they functioned like the mediators between the true God and the people. And that when you got Elisha, you got God. When Elisha spoke, you got a word from on high. Same with Elijah. When you got Elijah, you got God. And so the king stepped into the room and used the language of the day. And he said, my father, the charioteer is right here. The one who mediates the presence of God. It is you. And the language did not seem strange at all to Elisha. And he says, get your arrows. Get your bow. What's going on there? Get your arrows and get your bow. What's going on here? You know, the scene with Elisha and this statement. This is a bold statement being made over him. That you belong to a realm that somehow ushers in the very presence of God among us. It reminds me of a time, Jeremy, you and I went to the Michigan game, the Michigan-Ohio game. And we're at the 45-yard line with a member of our church. Dana Snyder secured some tickets, and we're like, no way. We got to go to the big game in the big house. And we're sitting in that stadium, and we're surrounded by maize and blue, and the crowd is electric because the first half was incredible, and it looked like we were going to have a real crack at actually beating this team. And there was a guy just a handful of rows up behind us that had this booming voice and almost sounded like a preacher, but he was preaching what I would say is pretty heretical. But what he said from behind us at one point, because the crowd was going crazy and the things were looking good, and he spoke, glory be, the spirit of Bo has fallen on this place. And I'm like, yes, yes, the spirit of Bo. And if you're not a U of M fan, Bo Schembechler is the coach. He's the one that we look to. It's like if the spirit of Bo could fall on this place, it could change everything. And then I'm thinking to myself, that is horrible theology. And truth is, this guy's just drunk already, and it's like noon, and he's just spitting out a bunch of stuff. And then, sure enough, second half, we got shellacked, all right? And so, yeah. But that's that feel here. And then the arrows, and then the bow. And what's happening with the arrows and the bow? Shoot it out the east, and then grab your quivers, all the arrows out of your quiver, and begin to slap the ground with them. And what's going on here? Well, again, the Mesopotamian, the ancient Mesopotamians used to have this form of divination where they would take arrows and bows, and what they would do is they would attest to these natural things, these very normal things, try to tie it to spiritual things, and they're using false gods to do this and not the true God. And certainly in this case, we're dealing with a true prophet of God, and we're dealing with God himself, Yahweh, the God of Israel. And in this case, he says, pull out your arrows. Would have this been familiar to the king? Yep. Shoot one out the window. All right. Shot one out the window. You will win a battle over the Arminians. You will completely destroy them at Aphek. Grab some more arrows, because the war's not over. Grab your arrows, and he pulls a few out of his quiver. Slap the ground with them. One, grabs another arrow. Two, grabs another arrow. Three, or maybe he grabbed them all. We don't know quite from the detail. And slapped one, two, three, and we find Elisha mad. Why did you hold back? Why did you stop at 3? You had more that you could have done had you just slapped the ground 5 or 6 times. Did the king know that these arrows could be used by pointing to the future that the prophet could spell, share with him about who God is and what God could do? Sure, he understood that. Did he understand that hitting the ground was important? Elisha said it, so it must be, and so he did it. Did he know that if he only slapped the ground 3 times, and had he slapped it 5 or 6, that it would have resulted in a complete win over his enemies? No, I doubt it very much. Because what would it take to slap the ground 2 or 3 more times? Certainly you would have pulled a couple more and just slapped it a few more times, but he didn't. What we do know from history, what we do know from the Bible itself, is that his holding back, his not stepping fully in, actually cost not just him, but those around him greatly. It was a great cost. And that is something that Elisha was pointing out. Erwin McManus wrote a book that's called The Last Arrow. You can tell by the title that it's about this story. You still have more arrows back here. And in this thing, he says, before you die, it's right on the back of the book, live the life you were born to live. You could pose that as a question. Wouldn't you want at the end of your life to be at a place at the very end of it that you would say, I lived the life that I was born to live? Wouldn't you want people that are around you to say, this man, this woman, my mom, my dad, my grandma, my grandpa, they stepped it up even in their latter years. My brother, my sister, my friend, they left nothing for the next life. Not a single thing. They spent it all. They gave it all away. They left the whole thing on the field. They knew who they were. They knew how God had designed them. And they knew this, that they were ordinary people that had an extraordinary God. And they put great faith in a great God to do through them whatever God wanted to do. Would we not want that set of us, each one of us? In this book, he invites us to be that sort of people. He invites us to think not like King Jehoash and think, I better save a couple arrows back here, but to spend every single arrow, to slap that thing until the prophet says, okay, you've hit it enough, that we just go for it in life. And what we find often in life is that we settle for less when we want more, and we give up too soon. William Booth, the same guy that I was talking about earlier in the service, William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, has one of the more powerful quotes I've ever heard. But he said, and this is true of every single one of us, that allows ourselves to move to that place where we think about, I want the impact of my life. It's not like at the end of my life, I want to be recognized as great. That's not the point. Like, who cares? What I want to know is at the end of my life, God used me to the maximum impact. There was great impact that God had through my life. That's what we long for. And what William Booth said, he said, I'm not looking for a move of God. I'm not sitting back idly and just going, wonder when the move of God's going to show up. He said, I am a move of God. I'm it. God showed up in me. He rescued me. He captured me. He made me his own. And in making me his own, now I am conduit through which God, this great God, I'll put great faith in this great God, which he can do whatever he wants to do in this world. In this book, The Last Arrow, McManus tells this incredible story of a guy named Mick Fanning. And unless you're a surfer, you probably don't know who Mick Fanning is. I didn't. I've surfed. Actually, I haven't surfed. I got on a surfboard once. That's not called surfing, though. I was just on it. So if you've ever surfed or you're a surfer, you probably know Mick Fanning because he has won one competition after another. He's a world-renowned surfer all over the world. And I think it was 2015. He was in Africa at a competition to defend his title. And at the competition, Mick Fanning was on the surfboard coming in, caught a wave, and they looked with horror from the crowd that he was fighting a shark that had attacked his ripcord on his surfboard. Somehow, he managed to hit the shore being unscathed. Didn't even get harmed by the shark and made his way back to shore. 6 days later, same spot, same place, got on a surfboard, made his way out to catch a wave, and the crowd, again with horror, was like, are you kidding me? Once again, he's fighting off a shark, and second time in a row, he made it to the shores without being scathed by this shark attack. And that would probably be enough for everybody in this room, right? Be like, the universe is telling us a story right now. Do not go in the water anymore. Put your surfboard up. But here's what he said. Because he went back to it again. When asked, what would drive you after two near escapes of your life to get back on a surfboard again in the waters of Africa again? Why would you do this? His response was this. My surfboard has given me so much. Surfing got me through the hardest times of my life. And I will not give up on my surfing now. I will not let surfing down. I have a friend. I didn't get it when he told me it years ago. I have a friend that he grew up on 7th Street in Muskegon Heights. He was one of the drummers at the church that I was at, the previous church, and he was telling me that his drums raised him, and I went, drums don't raise people. That doesn't make sense. But he explained to me that his dad, he never knew him. His dad was not present in his life at all. And his mom wasn't very present at all. He said, the only time I really ever saw my mom, and I never understood it, it's like this thing you moms have, that the only time I really saw her that much is when I did something wrong. And how she figured it out, I have no idea. But she would show up. And he said, so during that space from being like 7, 8 years old, and being in the home, pretty much by myself, I could have got into so much trouble, but my drums. God made me good at it. It just came natural to me. He had a gift that God gave him. He had rhythm that Jeremy doesn't have. And he had all this ability. And he could hit these drums in incredible ways. And he had a passion for it from a little kid. He was sitting there playing. And so that gifting and that passion drove him. His wiring was able to keep him in front of the drums instead of in front of the drugs and all the stuff that he could have got involved in. And eventually he was using that to make this beautiful, he still is, beautiful impact with the people around him. I get it now. My drums raised me. I will not give up on my drums. How much more could we say? Who's seen us through the toughest of times? Who came down and rescued us? Who birthed so many good things in us? Who continues to give us love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and self-control, faithfulness as well? These fruits of the Spirit, where does all that come from? And to say, if Mick Fanning can say, I won't give up on the surfboard, I'm going to continue to give my life to this. If my friend Tim can say these drums, and he has so much more now that he's come to Christ, but these drums, these things saw me through, and I'm going to be a drummer with my life. How much more us to say, I'm going to be a follower of Jesus. I'm going to give myself full on. I'm going to think about what is it that God has created in me and designed me for. And I'm going to step in. And that's why a big ladder, because I think a big part of this is the stuff that we're talking about. That we have opportunity to take a step and say, this gathering, I know you're here, and I know you're online, And I know there's another group that's in our church right now that they have children that are in compromised positions. They're actually meeting on the other side of our building because they want to be in a place where they all are masked up and feeling secure. I love that. Gathering. We want to come and gather because this matters. We want to be in a place where we're growing. We're thinking about our spiritual disciplines and thinking, I don't want to just talk about getting in the Bible. I want to get in the Bible. I don't want to just talk about joining a group of people that are going to study and pray. I actually want to do that. That I want to connect. That I'm going to find my people. I'm going to find those people that can come alongside of me. And I'm going to pray with them. And I'm going to have them encourage me. And I'm going to bang things off them. I want to be in a place where I serve. I'm going to look for opportunities. I didn't just come into this world to be a taker. I want to give of myself for the kingdom of God. I want to be in a place where I witness to the great news of Jesus, but also to my story as it intersects with Jesus' story. I want to be in a place as well where I give, and I want to give. I don't want to leave anything left for this world. I want to be generous with what God has given to me because I know when I invest in the things of the kingdom, it actually makes a difference. And the result of all of this stuff is I'm going to leave a life of impact. I'm going to choose to be a person that leaves a life of impact. And we're going to pray about that. I'm going to come down first before we do that. And then we're going to have an opportunity to respond. This has been a really important series. We're not done with it. We're in week 5. And if we're done with this, then it's actually a destination, right? This is more than a destination. This is the beginning of a journey. And I am hoping every single one of us will be in a place today to say, God, what are you asking me to step into? And we'll go for it. What arrow are you asking me to pull out of the quiver? Because I will shoot every single one of them to lead a life, live a life that at the end of this thing, and who knows when that's going to be, it will be said, this person left it all on the field, every bit of it. Father, to that end now, over these, my friends, I pray for myself as well. Come, Holy Spirit. Move. Move. We're not looking for a move from you. We are that move. You are the one that called us. You are the one that captured us. You are the one that rescued us. You are the one that redeemed us. So now, through us, who are just ordinary people, we want to put great faith in you, our great God, for a great move through our lives. And we pray this in your name. Amen.